Okay, well, good evening. This is Chair Rena Moran, pursuit of House Rule 10.01. I call this remote meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Ms. Sparkman, please take the roll for attendance.
Chair Moran?
Present.
Moran, present. Vice Chair Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Garofalo?
Present.
Garofalo, present. Representative Albright?
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Becker Finn?
Present.
Becker Finn, present. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Eklund?
Present.
Eklund, present. Representative Hansen?
Present.
Hansen, present. Representative Hassan, excused. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Representative Hornstein?
Present.
Hornstein, present. Representative Johnson?
Present.
Johnson, present. Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Kreisha, present. Representative Liebling?
Present.
Liebling, present. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, present.
Lilly, present. Representative Mariani? Representative Mariani? Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Marquardt, present. Representative Miller?
Present.
Miller, present. Representative Nash?
Present.
Nash, present. Representative Nelson?
Present.
Present.
Nelson, present. Representative Noor?
Noor, present.
Noor, present. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, present.
Pawlowski, present. Representative Petersburg?
Present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Pinto?
Present.
Pinto, present. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, present.
Schumacher, present. Representative Schultz?
Present.
Schultz, present. Representative Scott?
Here.
Scott, present. Representative Sundin?
Present.
Sundin, present. Representative Mariani? That concludes the roll. There is a quorum present.
Okay, a quorum is present. So our first agenda item is approval of the minutes from our hearing on Monday, March 22nd. The minutes were included in the hearing documents emailed to you by committee staff. Are there any questions or corrections on the minutes? Okay, if not, can Chair Vice Olson, would you entertain a motion to approve?
Madam Chair, I move the minutes.
So Representative Olson moves approval of the minutes for March the 22nd, 2021. Please unmute briefly for a voice vote. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
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 All opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. So members, today we turn a corner in this legislative session. Since January, the Minnesota House of Representatives have been vetting hundreds of proposals for how to improve the lives of our citizens. Tonight, we will adopt a resolution that allocates the resources of our committee needs to make those ideas become reality. And our budget process will begin in earnest. But before we do that, however, I have invited Commissioner Shaw Walters from the MMB back to the committee to tell us about the governor's revised budget recommendations. As we all know, our state economic forecast has improved dramatically since the governor first released his budget in January. So at my request, the commissioner and his team will walk us through the major changes announced last Thursday. Our finance committees should also be reviewing the updated recommendations from their respective agencies in greater detail this week. Commissioner Shaw Walters, welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. And with me today is a frequent guest, State Budget Director, Britta Raton. and I appreciate the opportunity to just briefly walk you through the governor's revised recommendations. Now, as I think this committee uniquely understands, the governor puts the first budget on the table earlier in the legislative cycle, but then has to redo it essentially based upon the changes in the February forecast. Under normal circumstances, those revisions are relatively modest, simply because most February forecasts are relatively modest revisions to the estimates. You then go through the work of updating your tax and spending items for the new forecast baseline, the impacts on those proposals, and then you'd make those changes, policy changes, and deliver it. In this case, there's more substantial changes, and really appreciate the chance, Madam Chair and members, for the chance to walk through these with you, even as we're sort of turning the page onto the next phase of this legislative session. The obvious part of here is that there's three budget priorities that the governor really built into his recommendation initially. Three key areas. One is ensuring that students catch up on learning, supporting working families, and supporting small businesses in driving economic recovery. He and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan called this, you know, the recovery budget, looking at COVID-19 and how do we recover from it, and seeing that each of these is key areas that we needed to focus our state attention on and resources on in order to move forward. So thematically, those themes that were in the governor's original budget continue to shine forth in this revised budget, if only maybe even more strongly, because the changes in this budget really started from a stronger financial place than we had before. So we had an ability to really focus on these goals differently and better. On the next slide, I'll sort of walk you through the high-level changes that you see here. The initial budget started from a place of a projected budget shortfall in which the governor and lieutenant governor recommended using one-time reserves and other monies to basically get us back to zero. With the use of that money, there were still needs to address those COVID recovery needs. Those new investments of about $1.3 billion were funded from a series of other changes, including some budget reductions, some new revenue, and on net, those things balanced out. With the February forecast, as you well know, we've moved from a budget shortfall to a budget surplus during the budget period. So as a result, one of the first things that was done was unplugging some of those one-time dollars that were used to basically cover that budget deficit. That includes the $1 billion that was called for in the budget recommendations from the budget reserve. And it also then proposes to not transfer the $491 million from the budget reserve to the resources used in the budget that were in the forecast and were part of the last budget deal. So by that key element of restoring the full reserve then leaves a shorter list of changes. Capping the stadium reserve at $100 million continues in the budget recommendations, along with new investments from $1.3 billion to $1.61 billion. That number grows a little bit because the net reductions shrank somewhat. But the biggest movement was on the net new revenue from $1.7 billion down to about $700 million. So the changes there isn't that the governor and lieutenant governor moved away from all of their tax proposals. Some of them are shrunk, particularly those that were not so progressive, that were regressive. And in addition, there were significant increases in tax cuts for working families and small businesses, about $1 billion. As the tax committee knows, and I think as this committee knows as well, the American Rescue Plan includes significant tax implications at the state level, and that the conformity and adjustments to those things, including how we tax or do not tax UI benefits, how we tax or do not tax PPP loans, and other elements are very significant. In addition, the governor recommended increasing things like the Working Family Credit to really continue to project and move on some of those three pillars that the original budget was recommended on. So, Madam Chair, members, that's kind of the high-level set of changes. What I'm going to ask is, if it's all right with you, the State Budget Director, Ray Tan, will go then through some more specifics included in our recommendations, and then if you have any questions along the way, or we can take questions at the end, Madam Chair.
Director Raton, please proceed. Introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Britta Raton. Again, I'm State Budget Director with MNB. This next slide just walks through the math that you would be used to seeing from MNB as we lay out the changes in our revised recommendation. So this looks at the budget overall. What I'd like to highlight is just kind of how the numbers that Commissioner Showalter walked through show up here. You can see that we had a February balance of $1.571 billion for 22 and 23. With the governor's recommendation, the change in the carry forward is reduced by $206 million. You can see that in the change to the beginning balance column. That's because the governor has recommendations for spending in FY21, so he's using some of those resources that otherwise would have carried forward. Our revenues, as Commissioner Showalter suggested, are $670 million in an increase in revenue, and so the governor's package is much smaller in terms of overall net revenue increases compared to what was released in January. The spending increases included in the governor's budget total $1.613 billion. And then on the budget reserve line for the change, you can see that what's highlighted there is compared to our February forecast, where we were removing $491 million from the forecast, we are restoring that amount. The small amount that doesn't get fully restored is due to some use of reserve that recognizes the need to use some reserve because the governor is not recommending the full $100 million of Blue Ribbon Commission proposals. So that's the reason that's less than 491 in terms of the change for the budget reserve. And then lastly, there's the stadium reserve. The governor maintained his recommendation that we cap the stadium reserve at $100 million. And so you can see that change from the February forecast level, which essentially directs $101 million to the bottom line of the general fund for other uses. If you could turn to the next slide. This slide provides, again, another look at the budget reserve, highlighting that under the February forecast, we assumed the reserve would be declining based on the law that was passed at the end of the 2019 session. So you can see the green bars represent the governor's recommendations now for 22 and 23. So not only did the governor move away from the use of $1 billion to support his spending priorities in the budget, but also restored the budget reserve, restoring a portion of that 491, much of that 491, to the budget reserve to bring it back almost level to where it is currently in 21. Turning to the next slide, Laura, thank you. As Commissioner Showalter mentioned, the governor's proposal does remove some of the previous proposals for revenue increases that were included in the governor's original recommendations from January. So we removed the cigarette tax increase. This one was, as the commissioner highlighted, one of the more regressive revenue increases, so that was removed from the package. So was the increase on the estate tax. And then the corporate franchise tax rate, there continues to be an increase in the governor's proposal, but the level of the rate increase has been adjusted downward. So previously the rate was increased to 11.25%, and in the current proposal it's increased to 10.8%, which is 1% over the current rate. Turning to the next slide. As the commissioner highlighted, this just provides some more detail that there are in this proposal additional tax cuts for working families. So the governor's original proposal included an increase on the working family credit. With this revised budget, it's also expanding the eligibility to 19 and 20-year-olds for the working family credit. It expands the credit to low-wage working adults who do not claim dependents. And it increases the maximum credit amount and then phases out for each of the brackets. And then for the property tax refund, there's also modifications there. This actually shows up on the expenditure side in our fund balance because it's not actually a tax change. It's an expenditure side of the budget. But this expands the maximum property tax refund for renters. Also, it excludes veterans' disability compensation from their income when determining property tax refunds for renters and homeowners. And then also, the first $10,200 of unemployment insurance benefits in 2020 are not subject to income tax. So it eliminates the income tax on those unemployment insurance benefits, which is consistent with the level. The $10,200 is the same level that the federal government is exempting from income tax. Turning to the next slide. And then, as the commissioner also mentioned, there are various changes for individuals and small businesses related to conforming with federal changes to tax law. One of the most significant is adopting some modified conformity to the Shuttered Venue Operators Grants and the Paycheck Protection Program, which excludes the first $350,000 from income for the forgiven loan amounts. There's also additional funding for the VITA grants, the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance grants for taxpayer assistance. And then there is just a listing there, and I won't walk through them all, of additional federal changes, conformity changes that benefit individuals and businesses. Then turning to the next slide, Laura, the changes on the spending side were less dramatic, but I wanted to highlight just a few here. There were some reductions in the decreases that the governor originally proposed, as well as some additional investments. So in the K-12 education space, there's additional funding for compensatory aid. We discussed when we released the forecast how the data that drives compensatory aid in the education space was somewhat disrupted this year because families have not been filing for free and reduced lunch, filing the paperwork. And so this provides additional funding, on a one-time basis for compensatory aid. There's also funding for expanded access to tutoring services. There's additional funding for Minnesota State, which fully funds their operating ask in the governor's recommendation. There's also a focus in the governor's recommendations on public safety and corrections. So it eliminates the reduction to county grants for community services and also provides an increase to those grants for community services. There's additional funding for the state patrol operations as well as funding for the Minnesota HEALS grants. And then in the health and human services space, just some highlights. It eliminates TANF refinancing as well as restores funding for the medical assistance research costs or the MERC costs. So again, there are some reductions that were taken off the table in this revision as well as some additional investments. This is just a sampling of the items that were changed in the governor's budget. There is a full document on MMB's website that enumerates all the changes and shows the dollar amounts for those changes. It's about 2 pages long, so we didn't go through all of that here, but it is on the website. And then lastly, this just shows spending by bill area for the general fund. This is kind of our traditional look by bill area. And you can see overall where the governor's budget lands in terms of what would be akin to the targets that you are discussing this evening. And with that, I can take questions or pass it back to the commissioner.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think that really just concludes our brief presentation. Appreciate the opportunity. I think one of the key questions that has come up is, how are we factoring the ARP funds in the governor's recommendations? And it's, as I think is implied and is pretty clear here, we are not. The American Recovery Plan is, along with other federal fund changes, are included in the submission for legislative review and approval. But the revenues, the flexible state funds, are not included as resources in the governor's recommendations. We're really basing our numbers off the February forecast, and I just appreciate the chance to walk you and the committee through, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. All right, really appreciate you coming back to walk us through that proposal, and I would like to right now just open it up for questions. So, members, let's see here. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to either Commissioner or Budget Director Rattan. Earlier we had spoken when you first brought this forward about the utilization of the stadium surplus. You had described it as sort of a, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but sort of a stopgap for what was looking like a budget deficit. Clearly, we're no longer in a budget deficit. And I know that it's been cut in half, but I'm just trying to figure out what's the rationale for utilizing the $100 million out of that, because as we heard in opposing testimony, them being able to utilize that to pay off the bonds gets the taxpayer off the hook earlier. So if you could maybe help me understand what's the rationale for continuing utilization of that $100 million.
Sure, Madam Chair, Representative, a great question, because the Stadium Reserve, I was around when we set it up originally, and it was indeed a element that we set up very explicitly to protect the general fund. We called it the People's Stadium with the expectation that taxpayer money would not go into financing the stadium. That was, in fact, doubtful the first few years that we started the financing, because the revenues were not coming in nearly as strongly as anticipated. The legislature wisely made changes and continued to make corrections until ultimately that sort of path seems to be working out. At this point, the reserve isn't really protecting the general fund all that much anymore, because we now know a lot of things that we did not know before. We know that the revenues that were included and dedicated to paying off these bonds are strong and durable, and I should be fine for the duration. By capping the amount that we're putting into reserve, all that's happening is that, you know, we're making sure that we don't create an even bigger target. Now, as for the financing of or refinancing of the stadium, great question, because that is something we are already looking at and will continue to look at. And it is MMB's responsibility to make sure we get the best financing deal for the state and for the state taxpayer. That's what we did originally, and that's what we'll do again. One of the key things about that is timing. I'm not sure how many of the numbers you've looked at, but certainly there are time frames when the original bonds could be called, and there are other times when there are basically more penalties that would be paid. 2023 is really the likely time that we would do it, and at that time, you know, we would look at refinancing, getting better interest rates, any kind of advantages that would occur. The question, I guess, then comes is, is it useful to have to buy down that loan at that point in time? Now, that's more a math question. And I can tell you that with the interest rates so low, the idea of putting hundreds of millions of dollars in cash to pay down a loan sounds attractive at first blush, but there's also the competing argument that this is the time where you would actually be borrowing when interest rates are so low. So I think those are the things that we need to sort of judge and look at when we get to that refinancing opportunity. But it really doesn't impact the structure and the reserves that were there originally.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I guess we'll have a difference of opinion on whether it's prudent or imprudent. From my perspective, many of the people that I represent are hopeful to no longer be on the hook for that. I do understand that you're, I think earlier we had said, looking through the couch cushions, but you're not needing to look through the couch cushions anymore. It seems, again, imprudent to go down that road. So with that, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any further questions for the Commissioner? Representative Pulaski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just two questions. Under the higher education, the MnState system, does that include an increase in tuition? And if so, what is the percentage increase in tuition in the MnState system? And then is there any investment in the state grant program under the governor's budget?
Commissioner Showalter.
I'll start, but I'll turn it over to the state budget director. And I think for everyone else's perspective, obviously the state sets appropriations for Minnesota State. Ultimately, it's their board that makes recommendations as to the tuition that will be set for this year, weighing their other revenue sources, the risks that they're willing to take, the type of enrollment they're anticipating, and all of those things. So ultimately, the tuition that's set is the responsibility of Minnesota State, the chancellor, and its board. But Britta, you want to just talk about some other assumptions?
Wait a second, Commissioner.
Okay.
This would be a unique governor's budget if the governor's budget didn't recognize the amount of tuition increase that whatever he is putting in it or not putting in it, is going to have an impact on. The Minn State system and the trustees are pretty clear with their recommendations on how much money they need. Then you correspond with and whatever's in your budget. And then there should be a number of plus or minus. Mm-hmm. But you don't have that.
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, Representative, the governor's recommendations fully fund Minnesota State's recommendation and ask. And we can talk a little bit more about that. Britta, talking about that and also the state grant increase, because we're trying to make sure that it's also not just through the systems, but for individual students.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, then I assume we're looking at a 3% increase in tuition.
Well, why don't we let Director Rayta...
That's all right, Madam Chair. I'll stop at that. But
I can jump in if you'd like, Madam Chair.
Why don't you give us some more clarity?
Yes. So to your question, Representative Pawlowski, there is not an assumption of a freeze on tuition or something to that effect. It is funding their operating request, which my understanding did assume that level of tuition increase. I think the commissioner was highlighting, they will make those decisions as they get closer to the school year and know their financial situation a little bit more clearly.
Okay, Representative Pawlowski, you go.
No, Madam Chair, thank you. I'm just trying to get clarity on exactly how much we are going to be putting on the backs of students in the middle of a pandemic when we have had declining enrollment across higher ed, and as much stress on a system as any of the other systems we're looking at. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner Showalter, it's good to see you again. My question is on the two be it further resolved and looking at the federal money that has a zero number for 2022 and 2023. So does that mean that the legislature could appropriate federal funds in fiscal year 2021 that we're currently in that ends on June 30th? Would we have the ability, because that would not be in the budget resolution, that funds that have entered the state for COVID relief, that the legislature could appropriate those?
Commissioner Showalter, is that you or Director Rayta?
I'm pausing.
Madam Chair, that's actually a budget resolution question, not a...
Oh, okay.
For the next part of the...
Oh, so that's a budget resolution, Representative Hansen, that maybe we can respond to and get some response to that.
I was looking for his opinion on it.
Do you have an opinion on that, Commissioner? He does not. He does not.
Mr. Marks has a cat by him, Madam Chair. I don't know if we want to address that or not.
No, I wouldn't. I would not. Are there any other questions for the commissioner? Okay, well, I would like to thank the commissioner and Director.
Chair.
Oh,
sorry.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Showalter, a couple of things. So in the federal funding, we're receiving, you guys submitted a LAC request, and it's pretty broad-based, your LAC request. Do you want to kind of cover what that is, or do you want me to cite what it says?
Why don't you just cite it? Yeah.
Well, Commissioner, I mean, it's a very open-ended request that you made to the submission that you made. Can you put some meat on the bones and elaborate on that?
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, Representative, a great question. At this point, no, but do we intend to? Yes. The bill was enacted just a few weeks ago, even as we were completing consideration of the governor's revised recommendation. So we've got a lot of information we need to gather about the eligible uses for these funds, the stipulations, the intricacies that go with it. But we also wanted to recommend and recognize that these funds were anticipated. And so we gave you as much information as we have at this point and intend to give you more as we get more.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, if that's the case, then how is the LAC supposed to make a recommendation on it?
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, Representative, it's kind of the same way that the governor at this point has incomplete information. We can't fill in all the information we don't have. We are all going through this unusual circumstance with the laws and the processes that we have worked under for a long time and made work, and we're going to continue to make work by getting you all the information that we possibly can.
Okay. And Madam Chair, Showalter, in the one of the specifics that's in the recommendation is it mentions to provide premium pay up to a $25,000 cap. Can you elaborate on what that $25,000 cap is?
Commissioner Showalter.
I can't. Madam Chair, Representative, if the budget director does know, I'll pass it on to her.
Director. I'm sorry, Commissioner.
If you don't mind.
I just assume the commissioner is the master of everything and knows everything. It was no disrespect. Director Rattan, yes, please.
Yes, Director Rattan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo. The stated uses in the LAC request are just consistent with the language in the federal law. Because at this point, we don't have guidance from the federal government. We wanted to provide transparent information. We wanted to get it into the 20-day process for the LAC, which, as you know, legislators can request a hold on those funds if it comes through the 20-day process. So being that we could anticipate those dollars coming in, we wanted to provide that information to the legislature along with as much information from the text of the federal bill as we could. But beyond that, we don't have the ability to do a lot of interpretation or applying guidance because the guidance just doesn't exist yet.
And Madam Chair and Director Rattan, what does that $25,000 cap reference?
Director Rattan.
Again, Representative Garofalo, it comes from the text of the federal law about eligible uses of the funds.
And Madam Chair, Director Rattan, what is that? What is that $25,000? I know it comes from the federal law, but what is it? What does the $25,000 mean?
Director Rattan, do you know what it means?
No.
Representative Garofalo, my understanding is it's representative of a cap that's allowable if you're paying premium pay.
Madam Chair, $25,000 cap on what?
Director Rattan.
Representative Garofalo, I'd have to reference back to the language, but I think it's a cap on premium pay.
Okay. So it's on like a per employee basis then?
Director Rattan.
Again, Representative Garofalo, I don't want to get into interpreting federal law when I'm sure guidance is coming.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. You were very thorough on that one. So, again, I want to thank the commissioner and Director Rattan for your presentation. If members and those who are watching at home have additional questions, I would like to encourage you to visit an MMB website, which has extensive documents available detailing all of the governor's revised budget recommendations. While the governor's proposals are not identical to the resolution that I will be offering momentarily, it is clear to me that his revised budget shares the goals of helping Minnesota families achieve greater financial security and opportunities as we recover from the pandemic. With that, we will move on to the next item of business, and I will ask Vice Chair Olson to preside for the rest of the hearing. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Moran. So, members, our last agenda item for this evening is the adoption of the House Budget Resolution for fiscal years 2022 and 2023. So, Chair Moran, would you like to move the resolution before the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would like to move adoption of the 2021 budget resolution titled BuzzRes 1.
Great. So the resolution is before the committee. Chair Moran, please proceed.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, our state has weathered many hardships over the last year. Thankfully, our rapidly improving economy economic picture has put the legislature in a position to help all Minnesotans recover from the pandemic. But recovery cannot be our only goal. The coronavirus has also laid bare the systemic inequities that exist long before most of us even knew what an N95 mask was or logged into our first Zoom call. We cannot settle for simply going back to normal. In our rural communities, lagging access to broadband made it more difficult for Minnesotans to work from home safely. Let me say that again. The broadband made it more difficult for Minnesotans to work from the safety of their home or consult virtually with doctors and therapists. For people with disabilities, their caregivers had to decide whether it was worth risking their own health to continue providing services for a substandard wage. And in communities of color, disproportionately poor health outcomes from COVID were combined with the trauma of George Floyd's death and the ensuing civic unrest that damaged their businesses and neighborhood. For too many Minnesotans, normal was already failing them. COVID-19 just made things worse. So as we emerge from this crisis, I believe we need a budget that accomplishes two things. One, we must prioritize the recovery of those most impacted by the pandemic, including our students, our working families, our small businesses, and our BIPOC communities. Second, we must reimagine how we approach the budget process so that it is centered around the principles of inclusion, equity, and opportunity. I know our finance chairs are committed to both of these priorities. And I also want to thank my colleagues across the aisle for your sincere engagement on these goals. In my time as a legislator, I have learned that if we take the time to truly listen to one another, we often find that our values are more aligned than we realize. So now it's time for action. The resolution before you today is a blueprint to build back better from the COVID-19 pandemic, while maintaining a balanced budget. As you will hear from Mr. Marks shortly, our top priorities in this resolution are robust investment in education, health and human services, and economic development. This resolution also acknowledges our improved budget forecasts by asking our tax chair to work with a net target of zero. I want to remind members that while these numbers represent the net spending limits, we will abide by this session. It is still up to our chairs and their respective committees to decide what they want to accomplish with those targets. To the extent that members have questions about specifics of what will be included in each of these bills, I encourage them to communicate directly with the appropriate chairs. So at this time, I will ask that Mr. Marks walk through the resolution for the committee, and then I would be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Chair Moran. Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and members, I will first go through the spreadsheet that you were provided that has the various numbers on it, and then link that back to the actual resolution. So if we turn to that spreadsheet, the committees are listed in alphabetical order, the same order as in the resolution. The first column of numbers on the spreadsheet are the numbers from the February forecast. So those are the projections are in the forecast released in at the late February. These would be the base level numbers for the various committees, the general fund spending for the various committees. Then the next column is the House numbers as proposed in this resolution for fiscal 22-23, and then finally the change column. And I would just make a note here that in the fiscal 22-23 column, that includes fiscal 21 changes as well within that number. And that's basically the way this has been done for a number of years, because fiscal 21 changes will change the amount the balance in fiscal 21 that carries forward into fiscal 2023, so they have an effect in fiscal 22-23 as well. So then just stepping through the various numbers for agriculture, the House proposal is $138,820,000, which is 138,820,000, which is 11,574,000 higher than the base level. For capital investment, it's 1,653,000. Again, 1,653,823,000. That's 73.6 million higher than the base level. For climate and energy, 29,846,000, 5.5 million higher than the base level. For commerce, 45,024,000. It's 1.3 million higher than the base level. For early childhood, 715,785,000, 50 million higher than the base level. For education, 20,810,000, 33,000, 721.7 million higher than the base level. For environment and natural resources, 372,666,000, 40.675 million higher than the base level. For health and human services, 16,247,833,000, or 323 million higher than the base level. For higher education, 3,526,128,000, or 120 million higher than the base level. For housing, 145,596,000, or 30 million higher than the base level. For industrial education and economic development, 65,868,000, or 60 million higher than the base level. For judiciary, 1,084,191,000, or 49,009 million higher than the base level. For labor, industry, veterans, and military affairs, 245,645,000, or 21,935,000 higher than the base level. Now, we just note on this one, when you look at the resolution text, there is a sub-target on that of 227,934,000, designating that portion of the 245 for veterans, the veterans and military affairs programs, the veterans accounts. For public safety, 1,574,034,000, which is 71,069,000 higher than the base level. For state government, 994,663,000, or about 35.5 million higher than the base level. For taxes, 4,164,181,000, which is the same as the base level. I skipped over legacy up there, and sorry about that one. We put that in here because the rule requires all the major finance bills to be listed, but legacy has no general fund money, so that's why it is at zero. Okay, then back here, transportation, 289,164,000, which is 39.6 million higher than the base level. And then workforce and business at 285,322,000, or 56,992,000 higher than the base level. Then there are several items listed under the other bills category here. And traditionally, there are some other bills that don't fit into the or are outside of the committee target numbers. The first two items, House File 445, is the SAFE Act, the $35 million there that was in the bill passed out of Ways and Means Committee that is currently on the House floor. House File 1064, the summer programs bill that the House passed today, is $107,382,000. And then there's $10 million set aside for the claims bill and any other bills that may fall in that category. And then the cancellations at the $20 million negative, that's the same as the forecast level. That's the assumption of cancellations that's here. So the net spending number here then in the resolution is $52,521,001,000. And that's $1,863,777,000 higher than the base level. I also want to point out in the net spending, the definition of net spending that's used here is the sum of spending minus revenue change. So it means that there could be revenue changes within this number. They have to be netted out against the spending to get to the target level. Finally, at the bottom of the page, some reconciliation to get to a budget balance. The House has some additional changes that are factored in here that are accounted for in the resolution. Adding the tobacco settlement revenue, this is the additional revenue that Commissioner Showalter sent a memo on last Thursday or Friday, I believe, acknowledging an additional settlement on tobacco revenues with money going into the general fund. That's $101,570,000 in the fiscal 21-22-23 period. This would transfer $150 million from the budget reserve in here, and then it would also limit the stadium reserve at the $100 million, as in the discussion earlier, which results in $100,700,000 staying in the general fund. Those three items add $352,270,000. And then the calculation down below here is just taking numbers basically from the forecast, the forecasted revenue, the carry forward from the previous biennium, the change in the budget reserve of $491 million that's in current law, the change in the stadium reserve is a negative because the stadium reserve is going up before the cap up above that happens under current law. Then the $352 million is added here from the House items in the category above. And then this balances out balances out for a projected balance of $59,289,000. So that, Madam Chair, members, is the spreadsheet. Turning to the budget resolution, the item labeled BUDRES-01, this is the text of the resolution, which reflects the numbers that I just reviewed, lines 1 through 4 of the total spending and acknowledging the stadium reserve amount, lines 1.7, 1.8, the budget reserve, the cash flow amounts, and then lines 1.9 through 2.9 would be the targets or the limits for each individual committee, as I mentioned them in the on the spreadsheet. The language that Representative Hansen mentioned earlier on lines 2.10 through, and well, that language in the next section, 2.10 through 2.12 establishes a limit for the coronavirus, federal funds received under the state recovery portion of Public Law 117-2 or the American Rescue Plan, and sets the target at zero at this point. And then lines 213 through 216 sets a target for the Coronavirus Relief Fund. This is the fund that had been discussed a lot in special sessions. And this allocates, there's currently a balance projected in that fund of $23.59 million that had basically all been spent. This money comes from cancellations from the appropriations that had been made previously. They were all set to cancel on December 20th. And then it also, there are some insurance settlements and potentially some FEMA reimbursements coming into that fund yet, but the balance there is all allocated to Health and Human Services with the assumption that they will use it to refinance some general fund spending within their target. And then the other language links 2.17 and 18 links to the February forecast. And 2.19 through 2.22 deals with if bills are combined or separated. This is standard language that's been in the resolution for quite some time. So, Madam Chair, that's my explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. Chair Moran, any comments before we go on from anything before we go to members?
Yes, Madam Chair. Well, that concludes the presentation of the budget resolution. So once again, if there are questions about what will or would not be funded within each of these targets, I recommend that members speak directly with the appropriate chair. But I'm happy to stand for questions about the resolution itself.
Great. Thank you, Chair Moran. So we're going to go to discussion on the budget resolution, and I know there are two amendments posted, and we will get to those amendments, but first we'll take questions and comments on the budget resolution. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Moran, or for nonpartisan research, in the summary that were provided, it shows that there's a charge for the education bill that passed off the House floor today. However, in that bill, it referenced a requirement for the commissioner to leverage federal funds, so there should be no general fund impact. Why is that listed in there?
Chair Marks.
Chair Marks. Has he been promoted?
I said Mr. Marks.
Well, I thought you said Chair Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, there is direction in that bill to replace the general fund money with federal funds, but we don't know at this point what if that's eligible for federal funds or not. There's many people assume it will be, but until we have the federal guidance, we're not in a position to say, yes, it will be. It can be replaced with the federal money.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Mr. Marks, so in effect, it is a contingent federal appropriation that is currently appropriated through the general fund. Is that correct?
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, yes, it is. The language is there to make it a federal fund appropriation. If when we know it is eligible, then it would become that.
And Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, I'll save my other comments for the amendments and for closing. Thank you.
Further discussion to the budget resolution from members before we take up the amendments? Okay, not seeing that, we'll move to the amendments. So we'll start with the A1. Representative Garofalo, to your amendment.
Actually, Madam Chair, would it be okay if I move A02 first?
Sure, that's fine, Representative Garofalo. So go ahead and move the A2.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the AO2 amendment. I would request a roll call on it, and then let me just explain what this is for people. So under the federal guidance that was the federal law that was passed, one of the portions that are in there is the capital projects portion, and this is federally funded projects or, you know, around federally funded initiatives around capital projects. Right now, those projects are excluded from consideration in this budget resolution. So it would prohibit the Capital Investment Committee from making budget recommendations for this fund. So what this amendment does is it takes that $178.8 million and puts that under the target for the Capital Investment Committee. It does not commit the committee to do anything. It simply states that it gives the opportunity specifically to the Capital Investment Committee to make those recommendations. This is cash. This is not bonding. It's federal requirements. It is purely optional and would allow the legislature to establish a position on these funds. And I would ask for member support.
Is there discussion to the A2? Chair Moran.
Madam Chair, and maybe this would be to Mr. Marks, but can you tell me what the impact of lines 2.10, 2.12 would do with inserting this into that?
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative Moran, they basically are independent of each other. The 2.10 through 2.12 deals with the state recovery portion of the American Rescue Plan money. This is dealing with the capital projects portion of it. So they're I think it's fair to say they're independent of each other.
Okay, Madam Chair. Just for clarity.
Chairman.
Thank you. For clarity for me, Mr. Marks, so are we using, inserting the American Rescue Plan Act dollars into this here provision?
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative Moran, there are many pots of money within the American Rescue Plan. The Garofalo Amendment here would deal with the capital projects portion of $178.855 million.
Within.
That is projected to come to the state. The resolution currently sets the limit of zero for the state recovery fund portion of the American Rescue Plan. So there are two separate pots of money. Again, we don't have guidance on either one of them, so we don't know exactly what they can be spent for. The name of the one in the Garofalo Amendment is the capital projects or coronavirus capital projects fund portion. So presumably it is capital projects, but they are two separate pots of money.
Madam Chair Moran. Thank you, Mr. Marks. So members, what I know is that this additional language really drastically changes our budget priority. One, we know that currently we don't know what the federal guidance are around these the American Rescue Plan Act. We are also are not utilizing those dollars within our budget at this current time because, one, they're not available. And so for that reason, I would ask for a no vote on this amendment.
Representative Hertas.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Moran. Chair Moran, I would speak in favor of this amendment. We just identified that House File 1064, $107 million is included in this, and we have a contingent line item for it. And this separate pot of money, as Mr. Marks has pointed out, is clearly intended to be capital investments, which would be under the jurisdiction and advice of the Capital Investment Committee. So I think this is a good thing to include in this, in that it doesn't interact with your bill in terms of displacing any money, and it's not any different than the $107 million that is earmarked or being contingent as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'd like to ask Mr. Marks kind of the reverse question to Chair Moran's question. So sort of the implication I got from Representative Garofalo's question is that in order to have any say over this money, that we somehow need to include it in the budget resolution. What I'd like to know is this, if we don't include it in the budget resolution, does this mean that we're just giving up our opportunity to have any say over this money? Or would this normally be, well, there's no normal here since we don't normally have this kind of money. But if we don't do this today, will we can do this later on by legislation, or there can be an agreement at the end of session and so on. Am I right about that? Or do we have to include this in our budget resolution in order to have any control over the money?
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling, the budget resolution is a separate implement from whether the legislature has any say over the money or not. By putting it in the resolution, it designates which committee would handle it if the legislature is dealing with it. By not putting it in the resolution, it simply does not limit which committee or how much is spent. So it's the legislature can still have say over it. If it's not in the resolution, it would be like many other funds or accounts that are not in the resolution that committees appropriate from or deal with. Anyway, for example, the Environment Committee dealing with the Game and Fish Fund or something like that. The Game and Fish Fund is not in the resolution. So it's I don't think there's necessarily a linkage between having it in the resolution and whether the House or the legislature has any say over it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Marks.
And Mr. Marks, just to follow up on that, is it possible to come back and amend the budget resolution in the future once we have a better sense of the funds?
Madam Chair, yes. The budget resolution there's a history of amending the budget resolution from now until amendments might be needed.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mark. So Representative Hertas, and we'll come back to you, Chair Moran, for the last word.
All right.
Or before the last word of the last word from Representative Garofalo.
Okay.
So Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, if we don't put it in there now, the budget resolution and any bill that goes forward with regard to the budget would eventually be signed by the governor as an agreement, as part of a global deal. don't put it in there, what incentive is there for the governor to sign a future bill saying we have jurisdiction over the money? Mr. Marks.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, I think, or Madam Chair and Representative Hertas, it's important to remember what the budget resolution is. It's a document basically stating the intent of the House at this point in time. Whether it's in the budget resolution or not doesn't indicate whether committees can take action on things. If it is in the budget resolution, it limits what committees can do. If it's not in the budget resolution, then it's not limited by the budget resolution.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I guess potatoes and potatoes, it looks to me like we have an opportunity as members of the House to have leverage on this issue. And I think that would be good insurance for us as House members to do, since appropriations are supposed to originate from the House. My concern would be that this would fall into the lap of the governor and he having his own capital investment bill rather than members of the House having input on this. So I'll end my comments there.
Thank you. Chair Moran.
Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, to clarify, you know, we do not have the ability to come back and amend this budget resolution later if federal guidance assure us that we can make changes without violating the law first. So these amendments are premature until we have more information, more guidance from the federal government. So that's why I am opposing it at this time. And yes, you know, we also need to talk with Chair Lee, who is the chair of Capital Investment, who is not on this committee and hasn't had the opportunity to review this amendment. So for that reason, I will say no to this amendment at this time.
Chair Moran, and I think just to clarify, I think you had said this, but maybe just said it a little different, that Mr. Marks did say we can come back and amend it, and I think that was the intent of your comment there, right?
Right, right.
Great.
We do have the ability to come back to amend this budget. Yes, I'm sorry. Yep.
Yes, I thought that's what you meant, Chair.
Yes.
All right, great. Representative Graffel to the A2.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members of the DFL, just to clarify here, if you don't accept this amendment, every finance committee of the legislature will have the ability to spend money from the Capital Projects Fund. Your resolution does not cap that. You are silent on that motion, and as we've talked about here today, the capital projects portion of the fund is different than the lines that you see on lines 2.10 through 2.112. So the expenditure limits you have in place there, you are allowing your finance chairs to set up individual capital projects in those other areas. Now, if that's your intent, then you should oppose this. If that's not your intent, then you should at least at a minimum be aware of this issue with your budget resolution and how you're constructing it. So I would ask for member support.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. The clerk will take the roll on the A2 amendment.
Chair Moran?
No.
Moran, no. Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Olson, no. Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Garofalo, aye. Representative Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Becker-Finn?
No.
Becker-Finn, no. Representative Bernardi?
No.
Bernardi, no. Representative Eklund?
No.
Eklund, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Hansen, no. Representative Hassan, excused. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, aye.
Hertas, aye. Representative Hornstein?
No.
Hornstein, no. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Johnson, aye. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, aye.
Kreisha, aye. Representative Liebling?
No.
Liebling, no. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, no.
Lilly, no. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, no.
Mariani, no. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, no.
Marquardt, no. Representative Miller?
Miller, aye.
Miller, aye. Representative Nash?
Nash, aye.
Nash, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Representative Noor?
No, no.
Noor, no. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, no.
Pawlowski, no. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Pinto?
No.
Pinto, no. Representative Schumacher?
Aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Schultz?
No.
Schultz, no. Representative Scott?
Aye.
Scott, aye. Representative Sundin?
No.
Sundin, no. 11 ayes, 17 nays.
A vote of 11 ayes and 17 nays, the A2 is not adopted. Representative Garofalo to the A1 amendment.
Madam Chair, I'll move the A01 amendment to the budget resolution.
Great. The A1 is now in front of us. To your amendment, Representative Garofalo.
Madam Speaker, Madam Chair, and members, this is on page 2 of your resolution, line 12. Currently, the federal program is limited in this budget resolution to a target of 0. So what that means is the individual finance chairs are prohibited under House rules from passing any money from these funds. So we discussed earlier in the committee how there are conditional appropriations that the legislature has the ability to pass, that this is federal money that if it is determined to be appropriate with federal law and the guidance from the Treasury Department, it gives us the ability to establish a position to say this is how we want to spend this money. It's conditional. And so right now, your budget resolution codifies in-house rules that your individual finance chairs will be prohibited from even considering passing one of these bills. I guess you could have a hearing on it, but you would not be able to take action on it because it would violate the budget resolution. Now, the amendment that I'm offering here on to establish a cap there, and this is the allocation. The cap I put in place is the allocation. I don't designate specific committees of how much they get. It just makes it so that the DFL finance chairs and the DFL finance committees will at least have the ability, if they choose to pass their priorities as conditional appropriations. The current resolution, as it is designed, it doesn't handcuff me or the Republican minority in any way. What it does is it handcuffs the finance chairs. This limits each and every finance chair from being able to even establish a position and priority. Now, our colleagues in the other chamber, they won't have that guidance. They're not going to have Senate rules that prohibit them from establishing what their priorities are. Likewise, the governor, after the legislative session, will have no requirement. So what this amendment does is it empowers the DFL finance chairs of these committees, who still have majorities of your committees, to at least have the option of making a decision, of at least proposing a bill. To be candid, I would tell you that I was a finance chair at one point, and if a budget resolution came forward like this, I wouldn't have accepted the practice that I was going to give up any jurisdiction or authority over my committee and that I was going to bump that up to the leadership tribunal. I wouldn't have accepted that, and I don't think as finance chairs you should either. So I'm going to ask for a roll call on this version of the amendment, and I'm sure we're going to hear from Chair Moran, as we should, but I would like to hear from the DFL finance chairs in this committee, if this is something that is worth fighting for or continuing conversations later on in session, then I'm willing to be helpful in the ways that I can. If, on the other hand, as a finance chair, you are okay with ceding this authority to other people, just please tell me so I don't waste my time trying to advocate on your behalf. But again, under the budget resolution as it is written right now, the budget resolution will prohibit each and every DFL finance chair from passing any bill for conditional appropriations or approval out of that $2.7 billion of resources available. So, Madam Chair and members, I would ask for your support.
Discussion to the A1. Representative Pawlowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question goes to either Mr. Marks or if Mr. McCormick is with us. Could there be another way to interpret this, that under rule of 4.03, this in essence would be $2.7 billion of unencumbered money that anyone could use for an amendment? I realize that the discussion has been so far the chair's, but if I could have Mr. Marks or Mr. McCormick tell me that if this amendment is adopted, then anyone could offer an amendment using this money on any finance bill under rule 4.03?
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative Pawlowski, this would make the total amount available for amendments by the chairs or anyone else.
All right, that's what I needed
to hear. Representative Pawlowski, yeah.
Madam Chair, thank you. That's what I needed to hear. This certainly would be an interesting floor session, not to mention a series of committee meetings. And maybe it's the way the membership wants to go, but it would be a whole new legislative process. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will go back to the question I asked the commissioner. Does this prohibit the legislature from appropriating money in FY21? So if the federal dollars are achieved this year and we have the fiscal year that ends on June 30th, are we able to appropriate dollars in the remaining months of this year?
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, this the way it is structured does not prohibit spending in fiscal 21, but the interpretation with the budget resolution has always been that spending in the current biennium in fiscal 21 reduces the funding available in the next biennium in 22 and 23. So an argument can be made that if 100 million is spent in fiscal 21, that means that less is available in 22, 23. So there is a way to make an argument that kind of spending is prohibited. I think there's room for interpretation there, probably.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. But if it's one-time money that's been received and it's not in the tails, if we appropriated it in FY21 and in an appropriation said that it was extended into FY22, if it was not encumbered by June 30th, you would still be able to have an appropriation. Would that be correct?
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, I think possibly, but we're venturing into kind of we've not dealt with this size of money at this point in time before. I think we need to have some discussions about the implications of that.
Representative Hansen, anything further?
That's why I asked the question.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I couldn't resist I have to thank Representative Garoppolo for his deep concern for the DFL fiscal chairs and how we're going to be able to manage. And I just wanted to kind of go back to what Mr. Marks said before on the other amendment that, and just Mr. Marks, if I'm correct interpreting what you said, that if we don't mention these other funds, and of course we don't know what's available to us. That's part of the problem that we all have. But if it's not mentioned, I don't think that under your answer before that Representative Garofalo is correct, that in fact, if there's no target for this money under the budget resolution, until there is such a target set for this money, there's nothing prohibiting chairs from putting this money in their bills. Am I right about that, or did I misunderstand your previous answer?
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling, in this particular case, because the current language in the budget resolution on lines 2.10 through 2.12 limits this fund to zero, that would be out of order under the resolution as proposed. The what we talked about before, Representative Garofalo had proposed a different fund that is not in the resolution. So the circumstances are a little different.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Marks, thanks for clarifying that. Right. And but there is, however, when we learn about how this money can be used and decisions are made or there are proposals put forward about how to use the money, we as fiscal chairs and members of our committees are still potentially in the position then of coming back to ask for an amendment to the budget resolution, or, you know, there could be a decision to amend the budget resolution at a later time, right, when we know what's available to us and decisions have been made about where that should be allocated, that we could then come back and include that and appropriate that money. Is that accurate?
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling, the budget resolution could be amended at a later time to, yes, as you suggested.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. Chair Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I want us to look at line 2.12, which is, and this amendment is this deleting line, Chair, and deleting zero, and then inserting a $2,557,400,000. And so I just want to make this clear that in this budget resolution, we are not spending any federal aid because we don't know. We don't know yet what that looks like. We don't have any guidance. So we are not authorizing like any spending from these funds until we are sure we understand the federal guidance. We do not want to appropriate any dollars that are not fully backed by existing state funds. What our budget proposal is with existing state funds. So, for example, the summer learning bills that we just passed off the floor include language that allows for replacing and the appropriated dollars with future federal funding, right? That is deemed eligible. That type of conditional replacement is not prohibited by this resolution. But for now, we need to back any spending with dollars already in the general fund. That is our plan A. That is the plan. And for that reason, I ask members to vote no on this amendment.
Thank you, Chair Moran. Representative O'Neill.
Madam Chair, I just have a quick clarification question. What if we never revisit this budget resolution and it stays at zero and the money stays somewhere, then can the governor just appropriate all of that money? If we don't ever revisit this, then does that go back to the governor for him to appropriate all the money, just like he did the over $2 billion that came in prior, or more than that? Maybe it's $4 billion now.
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, the budget resolution applies while bills are moving through the House. It does not apply to bills that come back from conference committee or bills that where the Senate has amended and the House is moving to concur in Senate amendments. So if the budget resolution was never amended, it would apply all the way through as bills move through the House process, getting their second and third reading the first time around, but it does not apply later on in the session.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, but just very clearly, the federal money, so the third COVID package is coming to Minnesota. Actually, it's closer to $8 billion in total, but the amount that we're talking about, if this budget resolution stays at zero and it never changes from zero, does that mean the legislature will not be able to appropriate that money? Is that what you're saying, that we would be able to even if we never passed anything besides leaving it as zero?
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, it means a bill moving through the House process could not do it if the resolution was not amended. It doesn't mean that a bill that the House couldn't agree with a bill that was amended by the Senate or was amended in conference committee.
Okay.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. So if the Senate, if we did not go to conference committee, so if we didn't accept a bill that came over from the Senate and went to conference committee, and that but that money was never encumbered by the legislature, then the way it is now, would the governor continue to be able to spend that money as he has with the many billions of dollars that have already come into the state? If we don't take it up, we don't appropriate it, then will the governor just continue to spend it like he has in the past if it doesn't come over from the Senate, if we don't go through the conference committee report? Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, I think the budget resolution is a tool as bills move through the House process. I think your question's a bit bigger one and maybe beyond that, in that the governor has already submitted now proposals for spending portions of the federal money, or large portions of the federal money, perhaps all of it. Those are basically, they work through the process that's in Minnesota Statutes 3.3005, which utilizes a statutory appropriation for the governor to spend federal money with legislative advice from the Legislative Advisory Commission. If the process is, it, as Ms. Raton referred to, a 20-day process, there's a 20-day process for review that started last Friday. If any member of the Legislative Advisory Commission, and the Legislative Advisory Commission in the House is the Speaker, the Ways and Means Chair, and the Chair of whichever Finance Committee the account is in, and then similar Senate members, if any member requests further review, that puts the proposal on hold until the request is withdrawn or until the regular session ends. So that process that's out there is, the budget resolution is a relatively minor part of that. If the legislative session adjourns, the regular session, and it, not a special session, if the regular session adjourns on May 17th, and there is no agreement on how to spend the federal money, the governor basically takes control of the process at that point.
Anything further, Representative O'Neill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is the point. If we don't take control, if we don't appropriate this money, we just give it all back to the governor, just like he's been doing, and he can continue appropriating money as if he was the legislature. That is the point.
Representative Garofalo, final comments on the A1.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. First of all, Representative Liebling, you and I are litter mates. We came into the legislature at the same time. I could not pick up via Zoom whether you were being facetious or serious about your comment about me helping out finance chairs. If you meant it to be sarcastic, then I would respectfully tell you you're not paying attention. Finance chairs come and go. Party control comes and goes. But what the budget resolution does right now as it's written is it prohibits you from passing any legislation that appropriates that federal money. Now, what the individual target, Representative Pawlowski rightfully pointed out that, you know, you're going to need to take this money and put it into individual committees, right? You can't just have everyone fighting over the same $2.5 billion. The downside to this would have been that if I offered a budget resolution assigning individual committees additional federal monies, then it would have been criticized as not outlining the DFL priorities. So I lose either way. But Representative Liebling and my colleagues, I hope you recognize that what is happening here, by having this target be at zero, you are prohibiting not only your finance chairs and your committees, you're committing the entire House of Representatives to not having a position on this $2.5 billion. That is the effect of this. Now, either that's by accident or it's being done as by design as a mechanism to consolidate power, whether it's legislative leadership or whether it's the governor, I don't know. I don't have visibility into that. But I would hope that I expect the DFL will vote down this resolution today. Representative Liebling, Representative Hansen, the other finance chairs, Representative Marquardt, Representative Dabney, I would hope that you guys are having conversations with your legislative leadership and with Chair Moran about having individual targets for your committees. Requiring the rules of the House to prohibit that there be no inaction on something like this, that's not a good idea. So I would ask for members' support. Thank you.
A roll call having been requested on the A1, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Moran?
No.
Moran, no. Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Olson, no. Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Garofalo, aye. Representative Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Becker Finn?
No.
Becker Finn, no. Representative Bernardi?
No.
Bernardi, no. Representative Eklund?
No.
Eklund, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Hansen, no. Representative Hassan, excused. Representative Hertas? Representative Hertas?
Hertas, aye.
Hertas, aye. Representative Hornstein?
No.
Hornstein, no. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Johnson, aye. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, aye.
Kreisha, aye. Representative Liebling?
No.
Liebling, no. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, no.
Lilly, no. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, no.
Mariani, no. Representative Marquardt? Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, no.
Marquardt, no. Representative Miller?
Miller, aye.
Miller, aye. Representative Nash?
Nash, aye.
Nash, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Representative Noor?
Noor, no.
Noor, no. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, no.
Pawlowski, no. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Pinto?
No.
Pinto, no. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Schultz?
No.
Schultz, no. Representative Scott?
Aye.
Scott, aye. Representative Sundin?
No.
Sundin, no. 11 ayes, 17 nays.
11 ayes and 17 nays, the amendment is not adopted. So we will go now. We had some discussion already to the overall budget resolution. We took care of the amendments and we're coming up on time here. So we'll go to Representative Garofalo for closing comments and then Chair Moran before we vote. So Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, members, I would encourage a no vote. Thank you.
Chair Moran.
Members, this is, you know, well, I just want to thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate discussing tonight. The budget resolution will help our kids catch up and keep up in our schools. It will allow us to maintain a robust safety net for working families, rebuilding their livelihoods as the pandemic fails. This is a good budget. It is a responsible budget. I ask members to please vote yes.
All right, seeing there no further discussion, Chair Moran renews her motion that the budget resolution titled Bud Res 01 be adopted. Ms. Sparkman, please take the roll.
Chair Moran?
Aye.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
No.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan, excused. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, aye.
Hertas, aye. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
No.
Johnson, no. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, no.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
No.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Sundin?
Hertog changes from aye to no.
Representative Sundin, aye. Representative Hertog changes from aye to no. That's 17 ayes and 11 nays.
There being 17 ayes and what was the nays, Laura?
11.
11 nays. The motion prevails and the budget resolution is adopted. Chair Moran, do you have any announcements before we adjourn?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. So members, again, thank you for the discussion tonight. We're going to take some time off over the next few weeks to let our finance committee get to work so they can complete their budget bills by third deadline. Starting Monday, April the 12th, members can expect that we will be meeting each morning from 9 a.m. to noon to process all of those budget bills and move them out to the general register. Staff will send out more details as we get closer to that week. That is it, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members. And with that, we are adjourned.